Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is reporter and writer, Sean Flynn. And we're talking about his book, Why Peacocks? An unlikely search for meaning in the world's most magnificent bird. Sean, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Thank you, Mark. It's actually a pleasure for me to be here.
Why do I get the feeling this is sort of a different book for you? Some kind of
it's not my usual material.
Yeah, it is. If you read the book, you understand. You're a crime writer, a crime investigator.
Pretty much, yeah. I write about a lot of crime and a lot of disaster, usually my stories have no happy endings to them.
Well, I don't want to give anything away. However, something does die at the end of this book. Don't say that. We could say it's not a peacock, but
all the peacocks survive.
And actually, when you think about it, this book sort of begins with a death too.
But I've
got to ask you, this is such a unique story, but as I read it, one of the interesting things that occurred to me is this is a story about your family. It's about,
yes.
It really is about your relationship with your children and your wife. And it really is a story about your family subtly, not obviously, but that's what I got out of it.
Yeah. I discovered in the process of this research actually took a couple of years because there's not a lot of narrative drive to a peacock.
I have this thing. What do I do with it? That's basically
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Learning about peacocks didn't take all that much time, but waiting for something to happen. And over those, it plays out over roughly a year and a half. A lot of things happened involved. My boys just happened to be at that age, where we're trying to figure some things out.
And you're always being very careful on how to deal with issues of violence and death with your son.
Trying to be, it's you always find out too late how much your kids are actually paying attention. it was writing about having to explain some of my stories to my kids was much harder than actually writing those stories.
Oh yeah, I can imagine.
That makes sense.
You're living in North Carolina now. I love the way you describe where you live. It's sort of a dinky farm, I guess. Would that be charitable? I mean, you make it sound like it's sort of a farm, aspiring to be a farm.
It's a weird little playland here. It's our neighborhood used to be a giant farm, and we just happen to have the original farmhouse and the barn that went with it, and it's sort of the property got carved out around it. But we have neighbors, very close on each side. Fortunately, on one side, we have this little paddock in front of the barn, and our neighbors have this miniature horse and a couple of little goats. So between the goats and the horse and the peacocks and the chickens, it's kind of like a little petting zoo here. definitely a little mini farm.
Now, you describe yourself, and I find this hard to believe, that you buy your son first a ball python, which ends up being a freaking disaster.
Yes.
And I'm a snake person, by the way. I love snakes. But you describe yourself as not really an animal person. And it's not that you have antipathy towards them. It's just not one of those things that you deal with. And furthermore, you're not really a bird person. And so to have gotten yourself this sort of immediately jumped in feet first with birds, I thought was an amazing thing. I thought it was a tremendous leap of faith.
I'm a little shocked by it myself still. It was these two little chickens.
They sound great. Yeah.
They were fabulous. Now we're up to seven chickens. I had no idea that birds could be so personable.
You're going to have to explain why chickens are so great.
Well, they are nothing but gratitude and joy. You put a chicken out. I would go out in the mornings to let the chickens out of their coop, and they would just be hopping and peeping and just delighted to see me, and they would jump down. And they would just stay at my feet and peck around, and they follow you around the yard. They come when they're called. They never get lost. You know, they always find their way home. And they can behave sometimes like little feathered puppies. It's really strange. And I just found them so charming that when the opportunity to get the peacocks came up, you know, I figured if chickens can win me over, you know, peacock, come on.
To me, it sort of sounded like, yeah, I do a morning jog. Let's do a marathon. That sort of leap sort of was like, yeah, chicken, these nice little two cute chickens. And now I'm going to get three peacocks. So you have to explain to me that what seems to be a tremendous leap.
Yeah. And it didn't work out anywhere near the way we hoped it would.
Oh, no. And therein lies the story of this book.
Yeah. So we have a friend whose daughter rides a horse, and she stabled her horse out at this real farm the next county over. And that farm had, several dozen peacocks, and it had been there for decades.
Now, were they in cages?
No. They were roaming around this giant horse farm, just out and free, as you would expect a peacock to be. For reasons never explained to us at the time, the owner of that farm was trying to rehome her peacocks. She gave us a story about an owl was killing them all.
So right.
We were actually rescuing these peacocks. Just seeing, I had never seen a peacock up close before.
Wow.
You know, I'd seen, you know, the NBC logo, and I'd seen them in zoos and seen pictures, but I'd never been up close to one. And they were spectacular. The colors were just, I still haven't been able to find an exact analog for that blue on a peacock's breast. They were just, I was fascinated by them. So our plan, a very sensible plan, we thought, was to have a peacock that was going to roam around our yard and be a lovely decor, like the chickens. You know, you roam the yard with the chickens. But we got talked into taking three, two boys and a girl, which was just a terrible, terrible mistake.
Okay, stop right there.
Yeah.
When the ante got upped, were you at all resistant? Like,
no.
One to three?
No.
These are big birds. These are huge birds.
Yeah.
Okay.
They are. I was all in.
You were.
Louise was not.
The voice of reason is Louise throughout this entire book.
Yes.
Okay.
And through several decades, she's been the voice of reason. So it's, yeah, she was not sold on three. But yeah, I was all in. You know, we were told that this was a social click, that these birds had sort of like, it was all a load of rubbish, but we bought it. I bought it. That these birds had all bonded together and they couldn't be broken up. And if we didn't take them, this giant great horned owl was going to come and bite their heads off.
So. Okay, we should also stop there. And later you find out that that's total BS, by the way.
Complete, yes. Yeah, not true at all.
Yeah.
It's, peacocks are... you know, they are they are very sweet, actually. At least mine are very sweet. They're very personable. They have distinct personalities, and they're very gentle. But out in the wild, which tends to be like suburbia at this point, they can be quite destructive. Because, like you said, they are big birds, and they have these giant dinosaur feet on them. And they're very territorial in the breeding season, so that's when they get loud too. They're only loud for about 4 months, but wow, it is loud and continuous. It just goes, you know, all night. So anyways, but they will get into fights with their own reflections. You know, males just trying to be dominant, so they'll see a peacock in the side of your shiny Buick, and they will just beat the tar out of it. And that's,
in all fairness to the peacocks, actually a number of other birds do the same thing to their reflections.
That is true.
Except the problem with the peacock is there's a difference between when a sparrow does it, and then when you're talking about a peacock jumping at your car, you're talking about paint damage.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, Danielle told me that she couldn't afford to keep getting her truck repainted.
Wasn't that a red flag?
Well, she didn't tell me that until later. this whole, you know, the whole from suggestion to acquisition took all of 36 hours. I mean, it was fast, maybe 48 hours, but it was, I didn't do a whole lot. Well, I did no research, really, none. I checked with my neighbors with the horse. I asked if they thought a peacock could be cool. And they said, yeah, that'd be great.
Did they know any more about peacocks than you did?
No.
Okay.
No.
I have
to. They knew that they could be noisy.
Sean, I have to tell you, at just the fact that you acquired them with the state that you were in that situation, just had me laughing there. It was, you didn't have to, it was just the situation alone. You just knew.
It was odd. You know, it's
was there anybody around you saying, like, maybe you should look this up and start to do some research?
No. No. And not even Louise at that point. You know, she is the voice of reason, but she didn't do any research either. She was going with a gut feeling that having three big birds was not a good idea. You know, they're here and we're stuck with them now.
Well, the interesting, and I think the really great thing about this book is all the little side trips and informational digressions that you take on this book. So there is the story of you and the peacocks, which is worth the price of admission, but there's also the whole social history of the peacock and cultures on the earth. And there's some weird contemporary crap going on with peacocks. We'll talk about that next, but I think one of the oddest things that when I first read this, I went, what? Martha Stewart owns peacocks?
She does. She owns 21 peacocks, which I know for a fact because the New York Post reported that she owned 20 or something, and she took to Twitter to let everyone know she owns 21. But she was, I mean, of course, Martha.
Right.
I am. Martha is my lodestar. You know, it's she. Of course, Martha has a peacock coop, and that's. I learned a lot from Martha Stewart. She was. I know that sounds ridiculous, but Martha was my entree into peacock husbandry.
But when you own that many peacocks, you have a very personal relationship with your three peacocks that develops over time.
I do.
She can't have that kind of a personal relationship with 21 peacocks. You can't have a personal relationship with 21 anything.
I know. And she has staff for that, I assume.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's probably like a peacock wrangler that's on the payroll there.
One would assume. And that's a lot of birds. That's a whole lot of bird.
Yeah, it's a lot of yard. It's a lot of yard that you have to have for having that many birds. Now, there's so many people that sort of are involved in this story as you go along too. And I don't want to give the specifics out because people have got to read it, but pretty soon you became really friendly with Dr. Greg Burkett, the bird vet. He sounds like a great guy. But that's one of the first things that comes up when you have birds like this is that stuff is going to happen and you're going to have to bring them to the vet, and it's ka-ching. It's a lot of money.
The
cash registers kept ringing throughout that whole part of the book.
Yeah, if I'd had any hint that it was going to be that expensive, it never would have happened. But you know, you're stuck in that, and that was weird trying to negotiate that with the boys and explain this to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally get that.
From a distance, it's ridiculous. You know, why on earth would anyone invest those resources into that creature?
Yeah.
But you know, as Emmett said, it's not just a peacock. It's Carl.
That's know? Right.
He was a pet.
Well, give out their three names now that we're at Carl.
Oh, yeah. So it's Carl, Ethel, and Mr. Pickle.
How did Mr. Pickle come about?
Mr. Pickle was named by my youngest, Emmett. If you look at a peacock with his full summertime train descending, it kind of, if it's not fanned open, it looks like a pickle. which I had never thought of. It's been once it's pointed out to you, it's like, yeah, I get it. Those little spots look like little bumps on a pickle. So Emmett named him Mr. Pickle. And Ethel and Carl were just ridiculous names. I don't know. Louise named Ethel and I named Carl. It's a dirty name.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is reporter and writer Sean Flynn. And we're talking about his book, Why Peacocks? An unlikely search for meaning in the world's most magnificent bird. Sean, let's talk about some peacock basics for the audience that they may not know, or especially if you're thinking of getting one as a pet. How much space do they need versus like a chicken?
So you can get away with.
Okay.
I'm roughing it out to about 80 square feet per bird. You can get away with less. You need enough room for them to be able to comfortably turn around without mucking up their train. That would be like at a bare minimum. Ideally, they wouldn't be in captivity. They'd be out roaming your many, many acres of woodland. But since most people don't have many, many acres of woodland, and you really should keep them penned up, you can get away with you know, basically 10 by 10. That's still cramped, if you ask me. Mine have a ridiculous amount of space that we just happen to have on hand.
Now, what do they eat in captivity? Is there like a Purina peacock chow?
There is. It's not peacock chow specifically. It's a game bird chow, that's what I started with. I took them off the game bird chow because it's a little too messy. And I just feed them regular old Purina flock raisins, the same thing you'd feed your chickens, and they seem to do just fine.
Now let's talk about the biggest misconception that the public has about peacocks. That's not their tail.
It is not. Their tail is actually ugly. It is these short, or not short, but much shorter, wide, flat feathers. And when they fan out that train, those feathers are actually growing out of their back, out of their lower back. And they raise their sturdy little tail feathers that you never really see unless you're behind it. And that's what lifts up those big, beautiful feathers that all fan out. And they shake that. So
the proper name for it, therefore, is the peacock's train, not their tail.
Yes, it is. Yes, it's their train.
And the terminology peacock refers to the male. What's the female called?
I know, right? So you have peacocks, peahens, and peachicks. But that is one of those things that it's almost useless trivia because nobody ever talks about a peahen.
Yeah, I know.
You know, nobody talks about peafowl. They talk about peacocks and boy peacocks and girl peacocks, which is not at all correct. But that is the common language. A guy that I met throughout this journey, he's a breeder. He went to an exotic animal sale and put up a sign pointing to his peafowl, and his wife told him that was stupid. He had to take that down because nobody was going to buy a peafowl. And that is exactly what happened. Nobody came to buy his peafowl, so he changed to peacocks. And people came and bought his peacocks.
And that brings up another. There's an association of peacock breeders that you ended up spending some time with. And now they come in a wide variety of forms and color.
Oh, my Lord, yes. Who would have guessed that there's a United Peafowl Association, which is not the same, by the way, as the United Peafowl Organization. And there is some rivalry there. So it's...
But they have all these color variants that just sound bizarre.
They do.
And you're a purist. You're a purist. You want your Indian blue peafowl.
I am. It is. They come in. They call them pastels now, but they're just sort of, you know, beige. Nobody's done the official count right now, and some of these birds aren't officially recognized yet. But there are well over, at this point, 400 different varieties.
Oh, my God.
Peacock. Yeah. You know, some of the variations are subtle, but there are people out there who are deliberately breeding this peacock with this peacock to end up with this peacock. And you know, there's different colors with sort of trendy names. You got your jades and your midnights your Montanas and your charcoal, which is what you think it is. It's a black and white bird. Some of them are just spectacular. Some of them are just sort of beigey, but there's a lot of them.
In the wild.
But yeah.
In the wild. Yeah. There's three species of peacocks. Talk about that.
So you've got, there's a Congo peacock, which nobody knows what it looks like. You can't really get a picture in your head because it's hardly ever seen. It's smaller, sturdier than your typical peacock. But most people think of a peacock and get that image in their head, that blue-breasted bird. That is an India blue, native to the Indian subcontinent. And feral is all get out. I mean, they have just spread all over the globe. They can live in very, very harsh conditions. Warm, cold, they take it all. And then there are the green peacocks, which are native to Burma, Java, a few places over there in southern Asia. Endangered in the wild, mostly through habitat loss, and very, very temperature fickle. They're sort of like the hothouse flowers. They can't handle the cold climates. So those are your three in the wild. And then the other sort of, it's not a different species, but about 100 years ago or so, a woman named Spalding crossed an India blue with a green because she wanted the sort of taller, more elegant green peacock to be cold hardy. And that's a hybrid now called a Spalding. And it worked, by the way. It is cold hardy.
The amazing thing is...
More peacock news than you wanted.
Oh, there's so much more in the book. I found it fascinating because the peacocks in culture, especially in Indian culture, but also in ancient Greece and Rome, how did the peacock get from India to the Mediterranean?
Oh, traders. I mean, it's just, you know, the early trade routes. If they were shipping spices back and forth, they're going to be shipping birds back and forth. These were always signifiers of wealth. If you were a rich man who could afford a spectacular bird, you were going to get that spectacular bird. And because they are so prolific in their breeding habits, it didn't take long to establish colonies all over the world. I mean, they were up in the British Isles, and I think the earliest documented is 400 BC. So they've been around for quite a while. You know, they show up in the Bible. Just not as any sort of religious thing, just they were being traded way back in the day.
There's so much more that I'm going to entice the listener to go read the book. There's some fascinating things about the cultural history of the peacock. But for me, one of the weirdest, and I think you know what I'm going to be talking about, sections of the book is when you sort of get to CSI Palo Verdes.
Yeah.
What the hell?
I know.
Give the background of that story.
So Palos Verdes, it's a little peninsula south of L.A., and there are three little towns in Palos Verdes. It was overrun with peacocks. It used to be owned by one guy, and he was a bird fancier. So he had a whole bunch of birds, including peacocks, and he let the peacocks just roam over what used to be just chaparral and scrub brush. But then towns got built there, and the peacocks were trapped out of most of it, but there's still a few colonies left on the peninsula, and they are left where most people want them. Half the people want them. So there's this one little neighborhood called the Lanes, and it's beautiful. It's all these little mid-century houses set on these canyon ridges, and the yards slope down into these canyons, and there are there's a horse ring, and there are bridle paths, and there are peacocks, lots and lots of peacocks. And, you know, they're not subtle. They're not, like, hiding. They're just wandering around all over the place. And when you first show up there, it really is sort of like this little storybook fairy tale land, because, you know, between the horses and the peacocks, it's quiet, and it just seems like you're 1,000 miles from L.A. But peacocks can be noisy and destructive, and they poop everywhere. And like chickens, they take dust baths, but because they're a large bird, they take very large dust baths, which it'll do a number on your garden. So around about 2012, they started showing up dead.
They did
just one or two here and there.
They were murdered.
Oh yeah.
They didn't just show up dead. They were executed.
Yes, and a lot of them. Almost 70 over the next couple of years, and they weren't killed humanely. You know, they were shot with pellet guns and then died of these slow, lingering, festering wound deaths. Some of them were poisoned. Some of them were run over by cars. A couple were shot point blank with a bolt from a mini crossbow.
Jesus,
it was awful. It was somebody who was clearly just driven bonkers by these peacocks, and who's also just horrifically cruel. It's scary when people do this stuff. But there is, so the SPCA of Los Angeles got involved, and this is one of my most favorite things I discovered. They have a real cop. It's not like, you know, some animal warden guy. He's like a cop with a badge and a gun, and he can arrest you and put you in prison. His name is Cesar Perea, and he spent a couple of years trying to track this guy down. You know, there were surveillance cameras. He was hiding in the bushes, you know, just watching. He got a tip of somebody in a silver Mercedes who'd taken a shot at a couple of peacocks in another neighborhood. He went and tracked down every owner of a silver Mercedes in Los Angeles and knocked on all their doors. It was really, really aggressive, and never did find him. So somebody got away with a whole bunch of peacock murder.
That story was wild, and we're completely out of time. We've barely scratched the surface of this book. My guest tonight is reporter, writer Sean Flynn, and we've been talking about his book, Why Peacocks? An Unlikely Search for Meaning in the World's Most Magnificent Bird. You call yourself a bird person now, I have a feeling.
No.
Yeah, you are. You wrote this book. You're a bird person.
I like my birds.
With that, we'll say goodnight. Good night, Sean.
Thanks, Mark. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.